Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really zeroing in on application-specific integrated circuits, or ASICs.
That's right.
We've got quite a bit of material here, articles from NeSilicon, eTimes, and a pretty detailed draft document, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they all seem to point towards the strategic advantages of using these, well, custom-designed chips.
Yeah, there's a strong case to be made.
So our mission, really, is to understand how ASICs can give you a real competitive edge.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking innovation, costs, supply chains.
All the big ones.
Exactly. And we want to do it without getting totally lost in the technical weeds, hopefully.
Right. Keep it accessible, but still, you know, substantive.
So let's just jump right in. Yeah. What exactly are ASICs at a basic level?
Okay, so think of ASICs as highly specialized semiconductor devices, really specialized.
Okay.
Unlike those general purpose chips, you know, the ones that do a bit of everything, an ASIC is designed basically from scratch for one specific purpose.
Ah, so not a jack of all trades chip.
Not at all. Or maybe a very focused set of jobs. But the key is efficiency. It's custom made, so it's way more efficient at its designated task.
Like having a custom tool instead of a multi-tool.
Precisely. It's built for just that one thing. Now, it's true, designing one, the initial cost, that can be higher.
Yeah, I've heard that. The NRE costs.
Right, the non-recurring engineering costs. But the interesting part is often you see significant cost savings down the line. Long term.
Okay. We'll definitely need to unpack that cost aspect later. But first, let's talk about the alternative, those standard off-the-shelf chips.
Right.
You know, from companies like NXP, Analog Devices, Infineon.
Mm.
They're everywhere. Easy to get. But what's the catch?
Yeah.
Where do they fall short?
Well, the main limitation is baked right in. They're standard. They're available to absolutely everyone.
Including my competitors.
Exactly. So if you're building your product around the same core components as everyone else, well, your ability to make something truly different is kind of capped.
You're all playing with the same basic building blocks.
You got it. It means your potential for real innovation, it gets constrained by whatever capabilities are already built into those standard parts.
So you can only push things so far.
Right. And that often leads to, you know, markets where lots of products feel very similar. Same features, same performance, more or less. Makes it tough to stand out.
Okay, so that sets the stage. How do ASICs flip that script? How do they unlock that innovation, that competitive advantage we're looking for?
By integrating an ASIC, you essentially get to build your unique features right into the silicon itself, into the hardware.
Ah, okay.
This lets your product do things that standard options just physically can't. It's a way to really attract customers who need those specific functions only you offer.
It's like having a secret ingredient baked in.
That's a great way to put it. It really is.
Can you give us some real-world examples? Where have ASICs really made a tangible difference?
Sure. Look at Apple. Their A-series processors in iPhones, iPads, those are custom ASICs.
Right. They don't buy those off the shelf.
Yeah. Absolutely not. They're meticulously designed by Apple for the exact performance and, importantly, the power efficiency their devices demand. That deep integration is key to their user experience.
That hardware-software synergy they're known for?
Precisely. Or think about Tesla. They use custom ASICs all over their vehicles.
Oh, yeah. For what specifically?
For a battery management, a huge one. For their autonomous driving systems, the infotainment. It lets them fine-tune everything for performance, reliability, power use. Things you just couldn't optimize as well with generic chips.
So it's about tailoring the chip precisely to the product's needs. For optimal everything.
Exactly. And that leads right into another huge benefit, power consumption.
Because they're so specialized.
Right. Because they're engineered for just one application, they can be incredibly power efficient.
How does that work? Less wasted energy?
Pretty much. They only include the circuits they actually need. There's no extra stuff sitting there drawing power for features your product doesn't even use. It's lean.
A lean, mean, power-sipping machine.
Sort of, yeah. It's tailored perfectly to the product's electrical needs.
And I'm guessing that better power efficiency probably translates into cost benefits, too, besides just battery life.
Oh, absolutely. Cost savings are a major driver for ASICs, despite the initial design cost we mentioned.
How so?
Because you're customizing it, you eliminate components you don't need. You're paying only for the exact functions required, nothing extra.
So fewer things on the chip means it costs less to make each one.
That's the core idea. Lower manufacturing costs, potentially higher profit margins. And often, a single ASIC can actually replace several standard ICs.
Oh, consolidation.
Right. Which saves you cost, saves power, and critically, saves physical space.
Which leads perfectly into that size reduction benefit. Single chip integration sounds much cleaner.
It really is. When you combine multiple functions onto one ASIC, you just need fewer separate components overall.
And that has knock-on effects, I imagine.
Definitely. First, smaller footprint on the circuit board. Super important for portable devices.
Makes sense.
Then, less inventory to manage. Simpler logistics. Assembly gets easier faster.
Okay.
And maybe most importantly, fewer physical parts and connections means fewer potential points where something can fail. So better reliability.
So you get smaller, lighter, and more dependable. That's quite a trio.
It really is. Especially for anything portable, those are huge wins. Now, besides the physical stuff, there's also protecting your actual innovation, your IP.
Right. Intellectual property. How do ASICs help there?
Mm.
Seems intuitive that a custom chip would be harder to copy.
Exactly. The unique design, the internal logic, it's just fundamentally harder for a competitor to reverse engineer or just replicate an ASIC compared to stringing together standard parts.
It's like locking your secret formula inside the hardware itself.
That's a good analogy. It acts as a pretty strong shield for your proprietary tech, your know-how.
Keeps the competition honest, or at least slows them down.
Helps maintain your market lead. Prevents easy erosion of your share by, you know, cheap imitations. Now, let's shift gears a bit. Supply chain. Huge topic lately.
Oh, yeah. The disruptions have been something else. I remember manufacturers scrambling for even basic chips.
Exactly. The whole COVID aftermath really exposed how fragile things were. OEMs couldn't get basic components because the big semiconductor vendors were prioritizing, you know, other customers or products during the shortages.
A real nightmare for production planning.
Absolutely. Plus you had factory fires, geopolitical stuff. It all added pressure.
So how does the ASIC route offer a safer harbor in that storm?
Well, by going for custom silicon, especially cost-effective designs, companies can actually gain more flexibility, better visibility into their production, more stability, and just overall more resilience.
How does one custom chip achieve all that? It still needs to be made somewhere, right?
True, but remember the consolidation point. One ASIC can replace multiple standard parts you'd otherwise have to source individually. Fewer lines on your bill of materials.
Fewer potential shortages to worry about.
Precisely. Fewer parts to track, fewer suppliers to manage. It simplifies things dramatically. It can even simplify the PCB design itself, maybe reducing the need for really complex, dense interconnects.
Okay. And beyond just simplifying the BOM, what about long-term supply? Obsolescence is a constant headache with standard parts.
That's another key advantage. Standard chip makers, they constantly review their product lines. If something isn't selling well or isn't profitable enough, boom, it gets discontinued. End of life.
Yeah, you get that dreaded last time buy notice.
Right. And then you're stuck. You either buy a massive stockpile or you're forced into a costly redesign. Often both.
But foundries that make ASICs don't do that.
The big pure play foundries, think TSMC, GlobalFoundries, they very rarely, if ever, obsolete an established manufacturing process. Even processes decades old are often still running.
Wow. So you have confidence your chip can be made for years, potentially decades.
Much higher confidence, yes. It offers way more predictability for long product life cycles.
That's huge. What about during general shortages, though? If everyone wants chips, are ASIC customers still safe?
Well, no one's totally immune, but ASIC customers are usually in a better position. Typically, you negotiate and book your specific wafer quantities well in advance.
So you have a reserved spot, basically.
More or less. You might still face allocation issues or pay a premium during extreme peaks, but you have a direct relationship and much clearer visibility into your supply compared to fighting for standard parts on the open market.
That proactive planning makes a big difference. Okay, let's tackle the elephant in the room. Cost. ASICs have this reputation for being insanely expensive to develop. Is that always true?
That perception is definitely out there. And look, for bleeding edge, super complex ASICs on the newest process nodes, yeah, it can be very expensive. Think high-end smartphones, AI accelerators.
Yeah.
But for many, many applications, especially where the goal is supply resilience or integrating key differentiating features, a well-designed ASIC doesn't have to cost the earth. It really doesn't.
So what drives the cost down or up? What are the main factors?
The biggest one is probably the choice of manufacturing process, the process node.
Like 7 nanometer versus, say, 180 nanometer.
Exactly. Things like, does it need non-volatile memory? How complex is the logic? How many gates? How much memory? What voltage levels? And crucially, what pre-designed IP blocks are available, and what do they cost to license.
IP blocks being like pre-built functional units.
Right, like a USB controller or a processor core. Interestingly, things like analog interfaces can actually be more economical on older, more mature process nodes.
Really? Why is that? Seems counterintuitive.
Well, analog circuit design doesn't always scale down in cost and complexity as nicely as digital logic when you move to smaller nodes. The physics are different. So sometimes it just makes better financial sense to put the analog stuff on a slightly larger, well-understood, cheaper process.
Which might lead to like a hybrid approach.
Exactly. We see this sometimes. You might have, say, a powerful standard processor for the heavy lifting.
On maybe a newer node, like 7 nanometer.
Right. And then you connect that, maybe via PCIe or something, to a companion ASIC on an older, much cheaper node, like 130 millimeter. And that ASIC handles maybe some custom interfaces or specialized logic, maybe even some programmable logic blocks like an FPGA.
That sounds like a smart way to balance performance and cost. But wait, doesn't that bring back the risk of relying on that standard processor? What if that gets discontinued?
That's a very real concern. And it's why you have to be strategic when designing the companion ASIC too.
How so?
You need to make sure there are multiple options for that standard part it connects to. And maybe, just maybe, you build some redundancy or alternative interface capability into the ASIC itself as a fallback.
Ah, redundancy in the silicon again.
Yeah.
You mentioned a healthcare patch example earlier. How did that work?
Right. So this client needed analog sensing, Bluetooth low energy, BLE, a CPU, flash memory.
Right.
Putting all that on one cutting edge chip. Way too expensive. So the solution was use a standard off-the-shelf BLE chip, readily available, lots of vendors, then develop a separate analog front-end ASIC on a mature, cost-effective 130 nanometer process.
But still relying on that standard BLE chip.
Yes, but here's the clever part. To avoid being locked into one BLE vendor, they designed the custom ASIC to be compatible with BLE chips from several different manufacturers.
How'd they manage that?
By duplicating key interfaces on the ASIC. They included multiple sets of GPIO pins, I2C interfaces, SPI interfaces, even redundant power management circuits, configured slightly differently to talk to different potential BLE chips.
Wow. So the ASIC became a flexible adapter, basically. Able to connect to various standard parts. That's smart.
Exactly. It gives you a buffer against supply chain issues for that standard component.
Let's pivot slightly again. Manufacturing security, geopolitics.
Yeah.
This is a growing concern. How do ASICs fit into that picture? Any advantages?
They offer a bit more flexibility than standard parts generally. While a standard chip maker might discontinue a part or face export restrictions, the foundry making your ASIC isn't likely to just stop offering the underlying process technology.
Okay, the process itself is stable. But the factory making it could still have issues, right? Fire, drought, war.
Absolutely. Those are real risks. So the strategy is to design for manufacturing security. ASIC developers often have relationships allowing them to potentially manufacture the same chip design at multiple fabrication sites or fabs.
Spreading the risk geographically.
Ideally, yes, though it's usually easier to use multiple fabs owned by the same large foundry company because switching foundries entirely means different design kits, different IP.
It gets complicated.
Right. Stick with one big player if possible.
Yeah. And the big ones like TSMC, GlobalFoundries, they are building fabs in multiple countries now. Mm-hmm. That inherently boosts resilience. Plus, it helps meet customer demands about where chips are made or tested.
Makes sense. What about worst case scenarios? Say a major fab goes offline unexpectedly. Even if you're relying on one specific fab for a specialized process, there's a great mitigation tool. Die banks.
Die banks? What's that?
It means holding inventory of your ASICs not as finished packaged chips, but as unprocessed silicon wafers or as individual unpackaged chips, the dies.
And it's cheaper.
Significantly cheaper than holding fully tested packaged inventory. And it provides a buffer.
How much of a buffer?
Often enough supply for maybe 1 or 2 years of production. That gives you critical breathing room if there's a temporary outage, or even time to migrate your design to another fab if needed. Banking about 2 years worth is a good safety net for that migration timeline.
It's like an insurance policy, but made of silicon.
Pretty much.
And what about the final steps? Packaging and testing.
That's usually done by OSATs, outsourced semiconductor assembly and test providers. The big OSATs also have multiple locations globally.
So redundancy there too.
Yes. And moving your assembly and test to a different OSAT location is generally faster and less costly than moving your actual wafer fabrication. Still needs careful qualification, especially for automotive or medical, but it's another layer of flexibility.
So right across the manufacturing chain, ASICs seem to offer more levers to pull for managing risk and ensuring supply. Okay, let's loop back to innovation. We said standard ICs can limit differentiation. Why is that, fundamentally?
Well, the appeal of standard ICs is understandable, right? Proven libraries, data sheets, evil boards, it seems easier.
Yeah, the path of least resistance sometimes.
But that ease can lead to, well, competitive stagnation. If everyone in your market is using the same handful of microcontrollers, PMICs, RF chips, the end products inevitably start looking and feeling the same.
Everyone's cooking from the same limited cookbook again.
Exactly. Trying to implement truly custom interfaces or super optimized performance or novel low power modes, it's often just not possible because the standard parts weren't designed for your specific unique needs. You end up waiting for the big suppliers to maybe add that feature to their roadmap someday.
Which could take ages, if it happens at all. Let's nimbler competitors jump ahead.
Precisely. If they're willing to invest in custom silicon.
So ASICs are about seizing control of that innovation roadmap yourself.
That's the core idea. It's a shift from being just a selector of parts to being the owner of the silicon design. Crafting a chip with exactly the functions you need and none you don't, that gives you incredible freedom right down to the transistor level.
Wow, transistor level. What does that enable, practically?
Well, want a bespoke hardware accelerator for a proprietary algorithm that blows the competition away on speed? You can build it.
Okay.
Need truly ultra-low power leakage for a device that has to last years on a coin cell? You can design specific power gating and sleep modes that standard chips just don't offer.
Tailored exactly to your needs.
The result is optimization performance per watt, area efficiency, security features that you simply cannot match with off-the-shelf parts.
And we talked about IP protection. That custom silicon is a barrier against copycats, too.
I'm a huge barrier. A competitor opens up your product, sees a custom ASIC, figuring out what it does and how to replicate it. That's a massive reverse engineering challenge, much harder than just identifying standard part number.
Protects your investment.
And it builds customer stickiness, too, because your firmware, your software, it all becomes tightly integrated with that unique hardware. It's harder for someone to just swap out your product for a competitor's.
You mentioned some examples earlier, Dexcom, DJI, Sensirion, using mixed signal ASICs.
Right. Dexcom for glucose monitors, they need that precise analog sensing, low power, reliable comms in a tiny package. ASICs are key.
Oh.
DJI in drones, complex motor control, sensor fusion, power management for flight time. Again, custom ASICs deliver. Sensirion for environmental sensors, integrating high accuracy analog digital processing, interfaces on one chip for performance and size. Common theme.
It really drives home that owning the silicon isn't just for the Apples and Teslas. What about, say, automotive tier one suppliers? Businesses further up the chain.
Excellent question. For tier ones, ASICs can be strategically crucial. Without owning key technology IP, they risk becoming just contract manufacturers, building to OEM specs, competing mainly on price.
Commoditized, basically.
Exactly. But if a tier one develops and owns custom ASICs, maybe for advanced motor control or unique ADS features or integrated infotainment functions.
They bring unique value to the table.
Precisely. They can offer bespoke solutions, become genuine co-innovators with the OEMs, not just suppliers. It allows them to co-develop unique features, embed their own algorithms, differentiate themselves.
So they move up the value chain.
Yeah.
Become more strategic partners.
Absolutely. And owning that ASIC IP opens up new revenue streams too. Licensing the tech, reusing designs across platforms, offering upgrades. It's a much stronger position.
Fascinating. Now, you mentioned mature nodes earlier, like 180 millimeter, 130 millimeter. Let's clarify that. Why are these older processes still so relevant, especially for cost and resilience?
Right. So the industry always talks about the leading edge, the tiniest, fastest, newest processes, super expensive, often overkill.
Yeah.
Mature nodes are the established workhorses, processes like 180 millimeter, 130 nanometer. They've been around, they're well understood, highly reliable, and crucially, they offer perfectly adequate performance for a huge range of applications, especially where low power, analog integration, and cost are priorities.
So you don't always need the Ferrari of silicon processes.
Exactly. A reliable pickup truck is often better. Mature nodes generally have much lower mask set costs.
The stencils for making the chip patterns.
Right, and lower cost per wafer. This makes custom silicon feasible for products with more moderate volumes, not just multi-million unit runs. Plus, decades of use mean tons of reliability data. Foundries keep supporting them because the markets are still massive.
And presumably designing for them is easier, less risky.
Generally, yes. There are very mature design kits, huge libraries of proven, pre-verified IP blocks. memory controllers, converters, interfaces, all ready to go. It shortens design time, lowers risk. It's often a much more predictable path for custom silicon.
Okay. Now, when people think ASIC, they might imagine one giant chip doing everything, a full system on chip, or SoC. Yeah. But you also mentioned strategic partitioning. What's that about?
Strategic partitioning is the idea that you don't have to integrate every single function onto one monolithic custom chip. It's often smarter, more flexible, and more resilient to integrate only the key differentiating functions onto the ASIC.
And leave other functions as standard off-the-shelf parts.
Exactly. You focus the ASIC development, the cost, the effort on the bits that really make your product special. Your custom sensor interface, your proprietary algorithm accelerator, your unique power management scheme.
Okay.
And then you use standard, widely available microcontrollers, memory chips, maybe connectivity modules for the more generic functions.
That makes sense from a cost and development time perspective.
Yeah.
How does it help supply chain resilience, though?
Because your entire product isn't dependent on one single complex custom chip. If a standard microcontroller you're using suddenly becomes hard to get or goes end of life,
you might be able to swap in an alternative.
Right. You might be able to find a compatible alternative from another vendor without needing a full system redesign, because your core differentiation is safe inside your ASIC. It gives you flexibility. It also makes it easier to create product variants or upgrades later.
So you get the custom advantage where it counts, but maintain flexibility elsewhere. Best of both worlds, potentially. Let's dig into that resilience angle more. Direct foundry negotiation? How big a deal is that?
It's huge. Having that direct relationship negotiating wafer volumes and schedules directly with the foundry, it gives you committed supply. It's like reserving your spot in the production line, often months or years out.
Way better than scrambling for standard parts on the spot market.
Absolutely. It shields you from a lot of the volatility, the sudden shortages, the price spikes you see with commodity chips. It brings predictability.
Yes.
And again, consolidating multiple parts onto one ASIC simplifies your BOM, your procurement, your inventory. And mature node ASICs, as we said, benefit from those stable production lines with very low obsolescence risk.
That long-term stability is key for certain industries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, final manufacturing topic. The shift from 8-inch to 12-inch wafers. I hear this talked about. What's the difference and why does it matter for ASICs?
So traditionally, many mature processes, analog chips, power chips, ran on 8-inch diameter silicon wafers. But that 8-inch supply chain is really strained. High demand, not much new factory investment.
Okay.
Meanwhile, the bigger 12-inch fabs, which used to be mainly for cutting-edge digital stuff, are now increasingly running mature processes, too.
Cool.
Like 130 millimeters, sometimes even older.
Repurposing the big factories for older tech.
Exactly. And 12-inch offers advantages. More surface area means way more chips per wafer, lower cost per chip, potentially.
Economies of scale.
Right. Plus, 12-inch fabs usually have more automation, tighter process control, potentially better uniformity and yield. They often use more advanced interconnects, too, even on mature nodes. And frankly, most new investment is going into 12-inch capacity, so long-term support looks better there.
But are there reasons to stick with 8-inch sometimes?
Yeah, a few. Some 8-inch processes can handle higher voltages, which is critical for certain power applications. Historically, for very old, large feature nodes, 8-inch could be super cost-effective. And you might find capacity at smaller, second-tier foundries on 8-inch, sometimes cheaper if they have open slots.
So trade-offs as always. What if a company has an existing ASIC on 8-inch and wants to move to 12-inch for supply security? Is it just a simple switch?
Not quite. It almost always requires a redesign effort. The design rules, the device physics, they're usually different enough even for the same node number.
Okay, more NRE involved.
Yes, but that redesign is also an opportunity.
How so?
Maybe you can now integrate other components that were also stuck on constrained 8-inch processes, like an MCU or some analog parts. The smaller features often available on 12-inch mature nodes, like 130 millimeters, make it cost-effective to integrate things like ARM Cortex-M cores, maybe even non-volatile memory, right onto the ASIC.
So the migration forces a redesign, but that redesign could lead to an even better, more integrated, more cost-effective chip in the end.
Precisely. It can be a catalyst for further optimization. The timeline might be, say, 14 to 24 months for a typical redesign and qualification, maybe longer for automotive. And costs, yeah, they vary, maybe $600K up to $4 million or more for a complex automotive 130 millimeter ASIC. But the long-term supply security and potential integration benefits can absolutely justify it.
This has been incredibly thorough. Really appreciate you walking us through all of that. So let's try and summarize. What are the absolute key takeaways for our listeners on how ASICs deliver that competitive edge?
I think it boils down to a few core things. First, customization enables real innovation. Unique features standard parts can't match. Second, despite upfront costs, there are often long-term cost efficiencies through optimization and consolidation. Third, and maybe most critical today, is supply chain control and resilience. ASICs offer more levers there.
Right.
And finally, leveraging mature nodes and strategic manufacturing partnerships makes these benefits accessible to way more companies than people might think. It's not just for the giants anymore.
Okay. So considering all that, the customization, the resilience, the strategic manufacturing, here's a final thought for everyone listening. What limitations in your own product development, maybe limitations you've just accepted over the years, could now be challenged? Where could embracing custom silicon let you take a significant leap ahead of the competition?
Yeah, that's really the question, isn't it? What possibilities open up when you start thinking about owning the silicon?